Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy any investment based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hello and welcome to the Sunday Roast. It's Sunday the 6th of November, and Halloween and Bonfire Night are now behind us, and the nights are now drawing in. In the week that was, Rishi did a U-turn on COP27 and he's now freed up his busy schedule to attend the climate summit in Egypt. What do you think of this? You're going to go and meet him next week, Kev?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I think he just probably wanted to go scuba diving in the Red Sea, to be honest. I think it's got nothing to do with COP27. He had the opportunity to go to 30 degrees centigrade and sit on a sunbed. What would you do?
I mean, Mr. Sunak said there was no long-term prosperity without action on climate change or energy security without investment in renewables. That's why I will attend COP27 next week to deliver on Glasgow's legacy of building a secure, clean and sustainable future.
I think our Charlie boy new king, should I say, basically told him, get your butt over there because it's very important.
So we've seen two significant bits of news. Let's keep it energy focused this week. I mean, we've got plans for a new multi-billion-pound nuclear plant at Sizewell, dubbed Sizewell C, under review now as the government tries to find savings. And Sizewell C was expected to provide up to 7% of the UK's total electricity needs, but critics have argued it will be an expensive and take years to build. And also the high-speed rail link in the north of England could also be axed. So they've got to find the savings from somewhere to kind of like fill this deficit, right?
Yeah, I mean, we're going to have some tax hikes as well, I'm sure, and interest rates up 0.75% and indicating that that's going to continue. Expected interest rates 4.5% to 5% by next year, which is basically what the Fed is aiming for as well. Fed tightened as well this week. Probably going to continue to tighten maybe one more time, maybe two more times, but basically they're now indicating that we're coming towards the end of their tightening. So hopefully, I keep saying it, but hopefully that means the US dollar is going to start dropping off a bit, but not necessarily against the British pound, but because there's an inherent weakness there because of all of these unplanned things that we're not priced in.
Yeah, I mean, there was a bit of doom and gloom this week, wasn't there, saying that it's going to be at least a 2-year recession. So it's not looking good for the UK's future.
Yeah, but I read that. Actually, that's just clickbait, isn't it? Because it wasn't 2 years. It was basically that because it would go over 2 years, as in it would be in 2 years, so maybe 2023 and we wouldn't come out of it until 2024. But that's not 2 years, as in
2 years of negative months. Growth effectively, you know, quarter on quarter is what the prediction is.
Yeah, well, they've been right a few times and they've been wrong a lot more, so let's see. You know, if people actually start to do stuff and to generate businesses because they're out of work or they want to do things themselves, then we can see the economy growing again. So who knows?
Moving on to another bit of news that came out on Friday was a new scheme launched, which will see customers offered cheaper bills if they agree to use less electricity at peak times in order to reduce the chances of blackouts this winter. It's called the Demand Flexibility Scheme. You have to have a smart meter installed at home to take part. And a typical household could save about £100 off one of their bills. So they want to save 2 gigawatts of energy during these peak times, which I believe are going to run between 4 p.m. and 7 p.m. Do you think this is doable? Do you think that, you know, households with kids can come home and say, don't touch that PlayStation, don't touch that kettle, don't put your clothes on the wash? And then do it most evenings on school nights between 4 and 7?
No. But what it does say is that this peak demand that is required is just not doable in the current system. So what does that tell us about the need for this type of electricity supply that just comes in when required? Do you know anybody who knows anything about this type of electricity?
We could have somebody on the line who does know a lot about it. We've got Louis Kurtzy, CEO of Kibo Energy. Welcome, Louis.
Hi, Phil. Nice to be talking to you again.
Yeah, I mean, what are your thoughts on listening to this, Louis, on this whole demand reduction on the grid during these peak hours?
Well, I think it's really important that that first and foremost, everybody recognizes the risk. I think that's the important thing to understand is that the fact that there are schemes like the one that you referred to just now being announced underscores and demonstrates that there's definitely an issue, that there's definitely something that needs to be dealt with. So from that perspective, yes, I think everything that one can do to avoid and to mitigate any risk of blackouts should be done if we see how South Africa is suffering at the moment as a result of exactly this and as a result of not being able to take preemptive steps to avoid this. Having said that, the scheme that you referred to just now, as far as I am concerned, in my humble opinion, is a little bit of a band-aid that you're using. So it might have an effect, and it's a good initiative, but it points towards a more systemic issue that needs to be addressed. And from a Kibo perspective, and where we are and operating in this sector. That's exactly what we're looking at. I mean, way back when we started MED, we were already saying that we're heading for this sort of situation, that there's going to be a massive growth in the market sector related to reserve power, to emergency power or peaking power. And that relates again back to the fact that the normal reliability and predictability with which you could do baseload has been eroded over the last couple of years in pursuit of the renewable energy strategy, which is not wrong, but we need to manage the transition a little bit better.
So before we do a kind of deep dive into Kibo, there was a broker note put out, or let's call it a research note, it's probably more accurate, by ACF Equity Research. And basically, you know, before we go on to that, just talk a bit about Kibo. They're obviously AIM listed. They're also listed on the Johannesburg Stock Exchange. Ticker is Kibo on AIM and KBO on JSE. And in the last sort of 12 months to 18 months, it kind of been a bit of a change in the direction of the company, changing to a renewable reserve energy, long duration energy storage and biofuel company. Is there anything else you want to add on that?
Just sort of as a side remark, Phil, I'm glad you corrected the reference to the note. ACF would not be happy if you refer to it as a broker note. It is not. It's an independent research note. But in any case, what I wanted to say is, I mean, this is what we were heading for as far as Kibo is concerned. You asked me to say a little bit more about Kibo. Kibo has been positioning for what is happening in the market here, what is happening in the market in South Africa at the moment. We've been positioning for this for quite a while already. And a year ago, we took very decisive steps towards redirecting the company to be in a position where we can take advantage of what we saw is busy developing in the energy markets. And that's why we set the company up at that point in time to be able to, as I said just now in my first few remarks, it is to be able to help and contribute in smoothing the transition period, to be able to play a role and make a contribution in the baseload generation side and the inefficiencies that we see there and the disruption that we see there at the moment, so that ultimate transition to renewable energy is successful. And we've identified three areas which we have communicated so many times already, but that is in peaking power. That's where Mast Energy is focusing at the moment, reserve power, and it's doing really well at that. The second one is in baseload generation related to renewable and clean energy technologies. Specifically, there we are focusing on waste to energy and biofuels. And then all of this have to be combined with long duration storage. And again, there we've gone a long distance over the last year to cement some very key and very fundamental strategic partnerships so that we are able to combine all of this and bring it together with suitable and workable and most importantly, sustainable long duration storage capabilities.
So while we're on the subject, you just alluded to Mast there, Mast Energy Developments and Kibo having a 61.27% stake in Mast. And it obviously also owns directly controlled renewable electricity generation projects, such as the new UK Southport Birmingham WETE project. So should we just talk a bit about Mast just had an update to market regarding the revenue figures from Pybridge. Do you want to just talk through just how I guess it's exceeded expectations, has it, since PyBridge came online in a steady state functionality?
No, it has exceeded expectation by far. You know, it's doing far better than what we expected. It's actually doing better than what we were hoping for initially. And we have to put that in context. You know, we are in an unprecedented energy market, so that does definitely have a huge impact on it as well. But it's not only that, it's also what we've been discussing since we started this conversation. I'm not particularly surprised that it's doing so well. It is to be expected because of what's happening in the energy market. But you know, in terms of is MED doing well? Is its production site at PyBridge doing well? Yes, it's doing exceptionally well. And it's outperforming our best forecasts and expectations at the moment.
So the investment itself, I think, looking at the note, it says that even that stake in MAST, Kibo's stake in MAST, is circa around 40% under the actual valuation at the moment in terms of its capital, right? Is there any, have you anything to add on that?
Well, I believe that as we continue to aggressively pursue and roll out our strategy, which we are doing, we said we're going to do what we did in MAST. We've done that. It's in production. It is delivering what we said. It's delivering more than what we expected it will, and that what we were saying that it will deliver when we first did the spin out of MAST. We're now in the process of doing the second spin out, as we've said we're going to do. That's more related to our waste to energy projects and our biofuel projects. In other words, in clean and renewable baseload generation. We believe that's going to follow the same route as what MAST has done. And then to follow is what we're doing in the long duration storage side as well. And as we continue to do this, and as we continue to prove that we are on the right track in terms of the strategy that we've put in place more than a year ago, actually longer than that, but in terms of what we our most recent significant strategy adjustment, which was about just over a year ago, I believe that that gap will close and the market will catch up. That 40% that you referred to will start to disappear, I believe. You know, it's a matter of continuing to deliver and roll out and execute is the correct word that I was looking for in terms of the strategy that we've put out. And I'm absolutely convinced that's the right course for the company to be in. And so far, MED is probably the best example that we are correct in what we're doing.
Yeah, it's an interesting scenario in MAST because you obviously seem to have an extremely supportive financial backer in MAST, willing to lend the money in the first place at 0% on the option that they will take shares at a ridiculously much higher rate than the current share price when they lent the money. And then subsequently, we've had somebody who thinks they're of biblical proportion involved with shares, thinking that this last financial deal for MAST was something to do with CLNs and a death spiral, when actually it looks like a fantastic financial deal for the company that they can pay it back in cash if they wish, or alternatively transfer it to shares. So what comments have you got on that?
Well, I think you've already summarized it, Kevin. I don't have much to add to what you've said already.
No, I have to say something, man.
but I mean, that's exactly the point. And I think, you know, some of the more cynical and dare I say negative comments on that last announcement fails to understand where MED is heading at the moment. This is exactly what MED should be doing. And it should be looking at instruments and funding mechanisms that is non-dilutive, or if it's going to have a dilutive effect, that effect is mitigated to the absolute minimum. It is a revenue-generating asset now. It's a revenue-generating business. It is going to conduct its business different from a development company like Kibo, which has been a non-revenue. We haven't been revenue-generating up to this point. So it makes perfect sense what they've done. And if you look at the terms that's in there, then it also makes a lot of sense from the perspective of the company. And more importantly, it helps the company to accelerate. This is the important part, to accelerate the development of its sites into production. We need to get as many sites as possible into production in MED as quickly as possible. If you look at the numbers that we've just discussed about PyBridge, it's a no-brainer.
Yeah, I mean, basically, Peter was saying that the expected revenues would be 10 to 12 million once all these sites are up and running per annum. So the ability to pay down this size of loan is probably very practical. It's not unlikely that they'll be able to do that and maybe then do the same again, which is like rinse and repeat, which I presume is exactly what the plan is, you know. But I was interested because this is obviously one individual shareholder who's obviously got deep pockets and sees this whole process working and can see that they're going to make a lot of money, because even to lend the money at 0% with, I think it was a transfer of 200% increase on the share price, that they can increase, or that they can take the shares. So, I mean, this obviously must be a massive vote of confidence. We're still miles away from true value, in my view, and, you know, having IPO'd at 12.5p with really just the dream that these things were going to happen, and now, you know, it's reality.
No, I would agree with your assessment. I mean, I think all the activities in Master over the past months, and even that related to funding, shows that funders have great confidence in what the company is doing, and definitely sees a significant value proposition.
Okay, so your current market cap in Kibu matches your shareholding in Mast pretty much. Okay, so everything that we're going to talk about from now on is not priced in to Kibu. So tell us the different projects and the different situations that we're involved in. I mean, first of all, I would probably, as we're on this subject, let's talk about Southport and the fact that there is Shankly, whatever it was called, but I remember Shankly because obviously Liverpool Football Club. So tell us a little bit more about that and how you see that progressing.
Well, I mean, if you look at the project itself, I mean, as we've announced in the when we first announced the transaction, I mean, it's got some very, very attractive financials associated with it. If you look at the IRRs, the IRR that we announced in that is above 20% at this point in time, and still subject to further refinement. And you know, as we approach financial close with that, these numbers will still change. But with the numbers that we have at the moment, these numbers are not numbers that have just been plucked from the air. These numbers are the product of a lot of study and work that's been done up to now. But the important thing is, I am very excited about what we could potentially get out of the Southport transaction, is because you have to remember there's an anaerobic digester component to it, where we will be producing biomethane. Then there's a 10 megawatt electricity generation component, which I'll come back to just now. And then there's also about at least a 2 megawatt storage facility. And I want to come back to our strategy, if you allow me to bore you for a few
seconds. No, keep to the script.
So, I'm joking. So what I said right at the beginning of our conversation now is that the Kibu embarked on this journey where we are now at the hand of a very carefully planned out strategy. And what is behind that strategy is to make a significant contribution in the transition, specifically in the baseload generation space, from where we are at this point in time to a situation where we can be completely reliant on renewable energy, on clean energy, on sustainable energy. This is why Southport is very important. Because if you now look at what we're doing with Southport, the biomethane that we can produce from that in its own right is a good commercial opportunity. And if we then combine what we're doing in MED and what we're doing elsewhere with the generation, the 10 megawatt generation capability and the storage, we are bringing the three elements that I've discussed earlier, reserve power or peaking power, long duration storage, stability and generation in baseload, all of those things together, but we are bringing it together in a perfect circular economy, where we're doing it with the biomethane, with the reserve power, if we bring in MED, if we were to explore ideas in taking that 10 megawatt and developing it maybe as a hybrid, where part of it goes into the grid, part of it is reserve energy, which we do in association with MED, and then we bring in the storage side. This is what we're trying to do. That's why Southport and other projects that we are involved in is so important, because it brings all these components together, but it brings them together with multiple revenue streams, not just a single revenue stream. So Southport, from that perspective, apart from the fact that if you looked at the project in isolation, as it stands today, it's a solid, robust project But in terms of the broader strategy that we're busy with, fundamental, very important.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's key to mention that, isn't it? That the multiple streams you've got. So 8 megawatt will be exported as electricity to the national UK national grid. And then, as you mentioned, you've also got the biomethane will also be supplied to the UK, which is unreal, isn't it, really? And the other thing about it is the project comes with permission to construct the plants, the distribution network, and also potentially the offtake or an end buyer is also secured. So, I mean, it's almost ready to go, isn't it?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, still, the project still has got a bit of work to do. We still need to get it to financial close. We still need to get it past that point. But what you're saying is correct. We're not beginning to think about a project that we want to do. It's far developed. It's very, very advanced. You know, to get to a point where you can even talk about financial close is a long journey and a very expensive journey. That's all behind us. We bought the project with all of that in place already. So we are ready to go as far as that is concerned.
Yeah, and really, it was saying in the RNS, I think that 12 to 18 months, that should be online. You know, you should be producing income from it. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, from financial close.
So, okay, Louis, okay. Also the feedstock for this is called Trommel Fines or municipal solid waste. Is that also dealing with a problem as well in terms of getting rid of a waste product?
Yes, absolutely. I'm back to the point that the circular economy. So, yes. I mean, if you're taking care of a big waste problem, but you're also turning that into biofuel, back to my earlier remark, and that biofuel we then can use in our own, within our own generation capacities, which makes it a perfect circular economy.
Okay, so let's move on to another part of Kibu. So let's talk about the cube situation or the storage energy again. It's the same story, if you like, but what is the situation with that? I mean, I think this is now moving continents, so we're mainly in South Africa, I think, now. But tell us a little bit more about the cube storage situation.
Well, I just again linking this back to the strategy before I talk about specific projects in South Africa. This is really important because any renewable generation, whether it's solar or wind or anything else, needs to have a storage capacity before you can really turn it into a baseload capability or capacity. So that's where it's coming from. In South Africa, we have an additional driver for the need or an additional requirement or an additional aspect that makes storage so critically important. So you have the same thing that I discussed just now. As we're pursuing the renewable generation agenda, you have to bring in storage to make that work. But in South Africa, there's the additional very, very acute and urgent need, and that is to get around load shedding. It is just the numbers. I saw the numbers last week. It's just ridiculous. We are beginning to lose months in the year now that we don't have electricity. Just because of the load shedding and because the generation capacity can just not deliver what it's supposed to do. So in South Africa, there's the additional urgency or the additional need and requirement, and that is to help get around base load. And that's also the reason why most of our efforts at the moment is focused in South Africa on the storage side, because there's an immediate urgent need to and requirement for this. And we are working in South Africa at the moment on, I think if I make a quick count, it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, I think 5 projects at the moment where we are busy developing long duration storage solutions for clients. And on all of these projects are progressing quite well. Some of them we've already made announcements of in the public domain, but all of them are progressing quite well. It is also the long duration storage thing is also something that we need to understand. We are talking so much about it internationally. Everybody is talking about it so much that we all think it's something that's been with us for ages already. It's not. It's new technology. The big flow batteries, all of that technology is fairly recent. It's fairly new. The production capability and capacity for these big battery storage facilities is only beginning to develop. So as we are developing these projects, we're also developing this business sector, this market as such, because it is a developing thing. And that's why, you know, sometimes it does look a little bit slow, maybe even, or a little bit difficult and complicated to understand. It is because it is not a mature industry. It's not a mature business sector or business thing that is there, and it's been there like coal generation that's been there for 100 years and longer already. Mm. It is a new sector. So we also have going through a very steep learning and development curve.
Yeah, we're seeing that also with the vanadium miners as well, in the same thing, because, you know, vanadium hasn't been, you know, exactly the best metal on the world to mine until recently. Yeah. But now with these long duration battery storage, vanadium is required.
Yeah.
You know, because basically I think the properties of vanadium is that it doesn't lose the ability to hold the electricity as many times as you want to do it. It just keeps holding the electricity and not depleting, I think is the real reason why vanadium can be used. So yeah, interesting. So with this cube situation in South Africa, how big is the potential market?
You're referring to CellCube, is that?
CellCube, yes.
Yeah. So yeah,
I just call it the cube thing.
The market is very big at the moment. I mean, how big is the market? You know, it's almost how long is a piece of string? You know, that's the situation at the moment. So it depends on how technologies are developing. But I just do not see for the foreseeable future, and maybe this is the way to answer it, because to give you an answer in numbers is not possible. I'll rather try and give it to you in terms of context. So the market going forward, any renewable agenda that you follow, any clean energy agenda that you follow, even if it's for hydrogen in the future, it will require long duration storage. It's the flip side of coin. You cannot divorce it from where we're going in terms of energy generation in the future. That tells you how big the market is.
Yeah, and I mean, even bringing that back to Masdar Energy, the philosophy for Masdar Energy has to be that the peaking is going to be required, but at a certain point, they're going to have to also tilt to long duration storage as well, because once the requirement for clean energy is provided, if you like, or should be mainly provided, then storage is going to be more important than maybe the peaking stations.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe that's 10, 20 years down the line, in all honesty, but, you know, this is something that probably is going to happen as well.
It is not that long. It's not 10 or 20 years. I think it's sooner that we will see that peaking sites will have to start moving to incorporate storage much more aggressively than what they're doing at the moment. So it's not so much, it's not even on such a long term. I think it's sooner. And again, I will keep on coming back to this. This is why we have positioned Kibu the way it is at the moment. I mean, our positioning in long duration storage started in 2018 already. We started with an aggressive process on that in 2018. And we might be a little bit early in terms of the process, but I believe this is exactly what we're doing at the moment. These various components we're talking about are critical in terms of the future, the energy future, and how the energy sectors and energy markets will unfold in time to come.
Okay, so let's move on to the next, and let's stay in South Africa. What about the project that you've been dealing with, which I'm
Gauteng, the plastic waste to energy,
the plastic waste to energy in Gauteng.
So I mean,
Gauteng is in KwaZulu-Natal.
Gauteng,
sorry.
Yeah.
So is this in Cape Town or in
no? This is in Johannesburg.
Ah, okay. So neither place.
In the north. Yeah.
Good geography, Kev.
Yeah. Okay. So we the project there is still progressing and developing quite well. I mean, it's in the process now where we are having the funding discussions. We are moving that project towards financial close at this point in time. So at this point in time, most of our attention is or our efforts rather focused on satisfying queries and requirements and needs and questions from potential funders for the construction and commissioning of that plant. So there's a lot of commercial work happening on that. Most, if not all, of the technical work has been done already. That project, is fully developed, as we've said in the past. We're now working on getting the funding in to start building it.
Okay, and do you see that project is something that's going to be replicated? You know, so once we have this in place, you can see this happening in other places?
That's exactly what we hoped we will see happening. That's and the project was also developed from the word go, was developed in such a way that we can just replicate that.
I also like that there's obviously a 20-year PPA on that as well, which is obviously, you know, it's very promising. But the other thing is that there are three revenue lines from that project. There's electricity and obviously gate fees, and then the heat and the steam. So it just has great, you know, great assets.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I mean, that's all three of those revenue streams are quite healthy in their own right.
What is the environmental assessment type things for these situations in South Africa? Because, you know, we have other companies that are dealing with stuff that's trying to produce hydrogen and different other things in different parts of the world, and the environmental assessments are just an absolute nightmare. So what is it like in South Africa?
Well, it depends on what the nature of your project is. As far as this particular project is concerned, it's a very run-of-the-mill environmental assessment, because we're not doing anything toxic or noxious or anything like that. It's a very straightforward, as I said, run-of-the-mill process, stock standard. So it's not for us in this particular project. It's not particularly cumbersome or difficult.
Okay, good. That's good to know. Okay, so tell us then about the coal assets and also what is likely to be happening, because you've made reference to creating 300 megawatts through some sort of process. So tell us a little bit about both of those and how they fit in this situation. Thank you.
Well, as far as the coal assets are concerned, we're still in the process of disposing them. In other words, our coal resources that we have, the one in Botswana and the one in Tanzania, we're still looking at disposing of those. And the more exciting part is where we're looking at replacing the energy source for these power projects that I should maybe just remind everybody that these projects are all already at bankable feasibility level. So they're fully developed. What we're looking at now is to find an alternative fuel source in the form of biofuel that we can replace the coal with in its entirety, and turn these projects into renewable energy projects. We've made announcements in this regard in the past already. We have been looking at various technologies, and we've found one that we believe is workable. Test work that we've done so far certainly proves that it can work and that it will work. What we now need to do is to see whether we can do this at industrial scale. Is this economic at industrial scale? At the levels that we've tested it so far, it certainly works from a technical point of view, from a commercial point of view, from every angle it works, and it works really well. But can we do it? Can this be done at an industrial scale? Can we done it at the size of a 300 megawatt power station? That's the work that we're busy doing with at this point in time. As we've announced to the market in the past already, there's an extensive study that we're busy doing. We've completed the scoping on that already. And we will be updating everybody in due course with further progress. Obviously, this is a fairly sensitive process at this point in time. And as we go along and as we are able to talk more and reveal more about what we're busy doing, we will definitely do that. But maybe just as a concluding remark, if we are successful, this is for the Southern Africa part truly revolutionary.
Tell us more
later.
Okay. You're just teasing us now, I think. But anyway, on just coming back, I mean that, and it is. I mean, 300 megawatts is no small amount of electricity production, if you like. So this could be an absolute game changer if this works. I mean, Kibu with a market cap of £5 or £6 million, producing 300 megawatts is like, whoa. This is the whole total of what MAST hopes to achieve in the next 36 to 48 months. Yep. So it's like an enormous amount. But anyway, coming back to the coal assets, are we in a situation where those coal assets are going up in value because of the current situation in the world, or just nobody's interested in them? What is the situation?
No, I don't think it's any of those. I mean, there's unfortunately quite a little bit of hype around coal assets at the moment, and it is what it is. the bottom line is that there's a huge demand for coal still, and that nobody can reason away. That's clear from what the coal production numbers and figures are. So that's still there. There is still a demand for coal, and it's most likely going to be there for a while still. And it's not, I think we all know and understand that coal is not just used in power stations. There's so many other places where it's used as well. So there is still a demand for it. That, to a large extent, drives the price for coal assets. And in our case, the assets that we're working on has got a particular value, a particular market value, which is neither, it's just dictated by what the market wants in terms of the quality and where it is and what you can do with the coal and so forth. But there's also various options that we're looking at, in terms of transaction or various transactions that we can possibly do. And that's what we're looking at the moment. We have various possibilities in how to transact, in how to dispose of those coal assets.
So going on to one other announcement that came out in end of September, Louis, the advances of corporate strategy with a strategic IPO spin out and the intention of Kibo's renewable clean energy generation projects to be listed on AIM as a new company named USE or USE. Do you want to add something on that? I think it's pertinent to talk about this.
Well, I think we've already covered quite a bit of that in the conversation up to now, because the assets that we're putting in there is what we're doing there from, again, coming back to the strategy. What we're doing there is to package our renewable generation, baseload generation projects in the form of waste to energy and biofuel projects, and to build that business case as the second leg of the strategy, as I've explained it earlier. What we were doing is nothing different from MED. In MED, we bought that company a couple of years ago. We packaged it, brought in a portfolio, developed it to a point where we could show the value proposition properly. That's exactly what we did with Ultimate Sustainable Energy. Now there's a waste to energy project portfolio in there. There's a biofuel portfolio in there, and we will could probably add to that before we get to the spin out, by the way, but. We've now brought that to a point where we can clearly demonstrate the value proposition, where we can clearly demonstrate the business case for that. And now we're going to set it on its course to realize its full potential.
So on spin out, I'm sort of scratching my head here, but based on the RNS, on spin out, the amount of that USE company that Kibo will hold will be in the region of, I think, 15 to 20 million pounds. And on top of that, they will hold MAST, because they're going to hold 70 to 75% of USE, and you're going to have 60-odd percent of MAST. So how on earth does this add up in terms of the valuation of Kibo as it stands at the minute at £5 to £6 million, when those assets are likely to be valued at well in excess of £20 million?
It doesn't add up. Your question is, how does it add up? So, from our perspective, and I'm coming back to what I said earlier, is that we need to keep on delivering on the strategy. We need to keep on executing, and the value will hopefully realize as we continue to execute and continue to demonstrate the value in each one of these various asset clusters, if you want to call it, or strategy components that we are busy working on.
Yeah, and the interesting thing about this part of the market is there really is no shortage for finance in these sides of the market. People are, if it's green, if it's renewable, people are happy to spend the money. So really, some of the past issues of many of the, in inverted commas, coal, mining, all of those different things that have struggled to get finance to make these projects happen, sort of just disappears. It dissipates in this area.
I agree with you. There's a huge funding opportunities, and I expect that it will increase. I think the various funding options and availability of funding will just get better, because the energy situation internationally, not only in the UK, so internationally, is something that is, if we're not going to solve the energy problems that we have, and if we're not going to be able to get around the various issues that are facing us at the moment, that'll just be a massive disaster. you know, it's rather ironic that the whole environmental crisis that we are in, if we want to solve that, we're going to need energy to solve it. So you know, I just don't see this. I mean, it's just something in which we have to invest. It's not whether it's not a nice to have.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So we expect to see use on the market first quarter next year. Is that the plan?
That's at the moment the plan. That's what we're working towards.
Okay, great. Good overall view of Kibu and what you're heading towards and what you have actually been heading towards for many years. But I think a lot of people didn't see it. But now hopefully it's staring people in the face and they can see that the potential. I mean, we didn't really mention the price on the note, but the note is suggesting the Kibu should be worth, I think, about 3 pence a share. And it's currently 0.017p a share. So, there's a slight discrepancy there, I think. So, check it out. We'll be putting the note out on many of the groups. The value range, basically 3.02 to 3.18 pence. Current price is 0.1718. So that's only about, what is it?
25x.
No, about 17x, isn't it? It's only about 17 times that if this note is correct and that valuation is accrued, then you'll get 1,700% return. So good luck. And I hope it works as we talk about it, Louis. None of these things happen by accident. And obviously there are always hurdles along the way. But good luck. Let's hope it comes to fruition. Okay, Louis, just before you go, you're on the Sunday roast. I know you've done the Sunday roast before, but now it's summer in South Africa. You have to tell us what you're going to do for Sunday roast.
What we always do, have a good braai, good barbecue.
Okay. Braai, but what's on the braai? Are we talking fish? Are we talking meat? Are we talking...
No, we're not very strong on vegetarian stuff, so it's not going to be chicken. And it's not going to be chicken.
It's not going to be chicken either. Vegetarian in South Africa, for anybody who doesn't know, is fish and chicken. Okay, this is vegetarian food. And one of those big, windy, circular sausages, whatever they're called.
Boerewors.
Boerewors. Okay, very good. Indeed. Enjoy. I know right now you're in London, so you're unfortunately suffering our beautiful weather, but you'll be back there soon enough, I'm sure.
Thank you very much, Kevin, and very nice talking to you guys again.
So what else has been on the radar this week? And any movers?
Don't know. It's been a bit of a quiet week, hasn't it, really, in terms of big movers anyway. So it's been a bit of news. Technology Minerals raised some money. Obviously, the delays in the plants meant that they're going to need more cash to see them through, which is, I suppose, understandable, but a bit of a pain in the bum. So that was a very low price, 1.25. It's reacted quite well, actually, because it's really been sitting at 1.35 to sell 1.4. So, there's a huge value in that stock, as far as I'm concerned. Absolutely huge. And we're going to go and meet Robin Brundell, I think it is, in November there. I think it's 24th of November. We're going to go and visit the site in the Midlands to have a look at the factories, lead acid batteries and the lithium ion batteries. So we're going to go and visit them. So that'll probably give some people a view of what they're trying to do, and obviously multiply that, having 10 factories, 5 of each within a period of time. And then also all the mining assets. So I really do think that's at this price now is bargain territory. I really think that's a hell of an investment for the next 2 to 3 years.
Yeah, it is definitely looking good. One that piqued my interest this week was a company called Grit Investment Trust, mainly because I saw that they were capped around the 200,000-300,000 mark, which for a main market stock. I mean, we saw what happened with Duke Mount when people realized that they were effectively a shell company, or SPAC, as it used to be called, or still is called, but it was always the kind of the buzzword sort of a year ago when all these little SPACs were being listed. And you know, where do you value a SPAC that's on the main market with cash in its coffers? I mean, we could be anywhere from £400, £500, £700, £1 million up to the £30 million mark, couldn't it? Which is the requirement these days.
I think we had this in the past, didn't we? With was it Aura Renewables that came on as a SPAC? They raised £1 million, and then the valuation was anything from £1 million to £30 million. I mean, I think the SPAC has to be effectively worth £1 million, because to come onto the market, to create your own company and come onto the market, probably going to cost you that at least. So if £1 million is the norm for a listed company on the main market, then it's got to be £1 million. So currently valued at what, 350,000 to 400,000. So maybe a good trading opportunity there. I mean, they don't do anything. It's just you're just buying.
I mean, the there was talk mentioned in one of the, I think it was the September RNS, is that they were looking for some sort of acquisition or RTO, reverse takeover. So in a similar as all SPACs do, right? You know, that's what they're on the market for. But there was some conversion, convertible loan notes, which were converted. So I think originally there was like 6 million shares, but just recently there was conversion shares following the issue of about 1.5 million. So now the total voting rights is about 10.1 million. So, you know, around the 3.75 pence mark, it gives them a cap of, you know, around the £375,000. So, yeah, it's just an interesting one to watch, isn't it? Yeah, I mean, obviously it could suspend at any minute. So it is a bit of a gamble. And moving on to suspending at any minute, we did talk about Made.com, didn't we? Unfortunately, there was an announcement this week that the PricewaterhouseCooper administrators had been called in to wind the company up after many customers found the website that they couldn't submit new orders. So effectively, the company stopped taking any orders. And then eventually it was winding up process. So ultimately it suspended. And unfortunately, you know, a lot of people were still trading that on the morning, you know, the night before. We were seeing these mad swings in it. And you know, at what point do you think this could suspend? We did say there was a danger, didn't we?
Yeah. And it wasn't the only one that was suspended, because Duke Mount was suspended as well. Because
there was three companies in the morning.
Duke Mount, GCAT, and GCAT, Caracal Gold, and Made. And the GCAT and the Caracal Gold were all for administrative issues, that they hadn't done things in time, which is bizarre for Duke Mount, because they weren't doing it.
Accountancy issues, weren't they? They hadn't submitted their accountancy. So, yeah, interesting. You'd think that it would be pretty simple on a company like that, wouldn't you, that doesn't have really much in terms of revenues and outgoings.
Yeah, it seems from the boards that GCAT was maybe something from the past, if you like, that they hadn't sorted out. But I don't really know the full details. The other one really that was had some good news this week was Sovereign Metals as well. Yeah. They had an offtake agreement or a memorandum of understanding for an offtake agreement with one of the biggest titanium oxide suppliers in the world, US based company. So yeah, I mean, again, this is bargain territory as far as I'm concerned. This Sovereign Metal, the biggest rutile deposit in the world, with added graphite as well, and also, you know, we talk about explorers and people hoping to get results but this is like getting to a point where it's virtually completely de-risked. I mean, the rutile's there. And they've dug down now to 25 meters and hit the base, and it's there. You know, before,
I guess it's just a question of funding now, and then the PEA, isn't it? Really, that's the reality.
Yeah. But even on that, the price that it's at now doesn't reflect even the risk of those things not coming in, if you like. So it's a bit of a head scratcher, that one, I think, really. Because on news that it had the biggest rutile deposit, it went up to 50-odd p. Yeah. And now it's sitting there at 22 or 23p. I mean, I know the market's not very good, but there are there are a lot of these discrepancies. And we saw it with Kibu today, didn't we? I mean, you know, the research note, if you like, that came out saying Kibu's sum of the parts is worth three pence. And it's at 0.18. It's bizarre like that. Somebody's got something wrong. And even if the note is very wrong, then, you know, it's like, why?
So what we saw on Friday was stocks rallying in China as the Shanghai Composite closed up 2.4%, and while the Hang Seng Index in Hong Kong was up 5.4%. And this is following unsubstantiated speculation that China is preparing to roll back its zero COVID measures. We've all seen those horrific videos on Twitter of people being pulled into these, these forced lockdowns and into these kind of COVID hotels, which are really just boxes with not much ventilation. So these limitations and lockdowns, which have obviously exacerbated a decline in consumer confidence and a faltering property market, have crimped demand, which has not only hampered the Chinese economy, but has also tipped over into other asset classes, such as commodities and oil. So, I mean, what are your thoughts on that? Because we've just seen a correction in the copper price, that's up about 2%. And we've also seen, we're looking for an 8,200 copper price. And if you remember in the past, Colin Bird has also mentioned this, that China has been kind of like stifling its inflation by these forced lockdowns. What are your thoughts on what that'll do now as China kind of opens up?
Well, you only have to look at the mining stocks now. Anglo Americans was up 8% on Friday. Rio Tinto up 6.5%. All the other ones, Centamin up 3.66%. You know, BHP up 5.2%.
Fresnillo were up, Endeavour up, Antofagasta are up. So they're all moving in the blue chip.
What do you think is going to happen? Tech Resources, which is a big American coal company, all up. Price of Highball A and Highball B went up overnight as well. Basically, it's going to start producing another rush of commodities, I think. I mean, I think maybe this is just the beginning again that we see peak commodity prices over the next 6 to 12 months.
And do you think that's going to impact Ben?
Yeah. I mean, every dollar increase in Ben, based on them producing between 750,000 tons and 1 million tons next year, as they ramp up production, is going to mean between $750,000 and $1 million straight to the bottom line. Not, you know, do not pass go, go straight to profit. So $4 it was overnight. So you can argue that that will produce 3 million to 4 million extra profit for Ben next year. So, you know, if we do get another $40, $50, what's that going to do? That's going to transform the profitability of the company. It's already profitable. I mean, and as it actually starts to hike up the production from next year, it's going to have a massive effect. Also, Contango is also going to be the same as well, as it starts to produce in the same vein, probably going to start producing in the first quarter next year. It's going to be the same situation. And all these copper producers, or not producers, but, well, yeah, let's talk about the copper producer, Jubilee, for a good one, isn't it? Jubilee, if basically the whole raft of metals starts to increase in value, then Jubilee is going to be a hell of a good situation. They are producing. And you can also argue that it should impact all of the explorers as well. You know, you've got who've you got that we talk about in terms of copper. You've got AFP, you've got Galileo, you've got Extract, you've got Bisant, you've got Keras Minerals. Who else can you think of?
Yeah, I mean, you've pretty.
I mean,
much
there's countless. There is more. There is definitely more.
I mean, that brings us on to Galileo. We didn't really touch too much on this because Colin hasn't been particularly. We were trying to get an interview with him, but bless him, he's not been particularly well. But I spoke to him late Friday, and he's on the mend, and he's feeling much more chipper, let's say. So Galileo had an announcement on Monday where they updated us on the Bulawayo gold project in Zimbabwe, and they've done the fieldwork on five initial priority gold and nickel targets. And they've effectively initial targets have been selected, and there's extensions to the historic gold mining and artisanal activity in the vicinity of the Queen's Mines. Two sets of gold bearing structures west of Queen's Mine have been identified, with structures known to host gold mineralization, plunging it under a shallow sandstone cover, and 6 kilometer long greenstone gold target hosting former project mines or producing mines. soil survey has commenced over that target. Okay, so it's looking good, isn't it? The progress there has been very good to date.
No, Galileo is a great deal. I mean, look at it. I mean, it's valued with all of its cash, you know, very cheaply.
And really, the AFRIMAT deal and the option on that was taken or exercised really hasn't been factored into this, has it? Really, you know, it hasn't moved the dial.
No, it hasn't at all, which is a bit bizarre. And you know, they've signed the deal. They're going to get the cash. It's just a case of when, and they're going to have £8 million, I think it is, of cash. So all their assets are now valued at around about £10 million, is it, or less? So basically, you've got an explorer who's got all the cash to develop all of its projects, and those projects are now only valued at £10 million. Now, if it didn't have any cash, that would be fair enough. Yeah, it's got the cash. So to have that valuation when there's basically no possibility of dilution going forward in that situation just seems strange, to say the least. And as we said, what we've just said about the copper prices, and if China starts to open, you can see the miners are going crazy. FTSE's up, FTSE was up 1.5%, and because it's a strong group of miners in that FTSE 100, and that's why. So yeah. I think maybe this is a good sea change. So let's see what happens.
On that note, I think we'll wrap things up, and I wish you a good weekend, or what's left of it. And then we'll catch up next week.
Yep. All good.
This podcast was brought to you by Roast PR Limited. If you would like to appear on a future episode of The Sunday Roast, please email admin@thesundayroast.net.